You're listening to the Mind Over Murder podcast.
My name is Bill Thomas. I'm a writer, consulting producer, and now podcaster. I am now trying to use my experience as the brother of a murder victim to help other victims of violent crime. I'm working on a book on the unsolved Colonial Parkway murders, and I'm the co-administrator of the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook group together with Kristen Dilley.
My name is Kristen Dilley. I'm a writer, a researcher, a teacher, and a victim's advocate, as well as the social media manager and co-administrator for the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook page with my partner in crime, Bill Thomas. Welcome to Mind Over Murder. I'm Kristen Dilley.
And I'm Bill Thomas.
And Mr. Thomas, what episode of Mind Over Murder is this?
I just discovered that we're coming up on episode 168.
That's crazy.
Time flies when you're covering true crime.
Yeah, and I just can't believe we've been doing it for that long.
I know. It's actually pretty amazing. But you looked very surprised when you asked me what the number was. We don't usually refer to them by number. Podcasters do. We're just not among the podcasters that reference podcast numbers.
It's very odd knowing that we've put out almost 200 episodes.
Wait a minute. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, our young lady.
Closer to 200 than it is to 100, say.
Okay. I thought you were going to say to 150, and I was going to say, no, it's not.
Nope. Still, that's a lot of good content for us.
Most importantly, I think our audience deserves a round of applause. And
yes.
Thank you all for your support.
We would remind you guys, while you're lovingly supporting us, to buy some merch from our Tee Public site.
Yes, there's a sale coming up. We'll let you know when all the good stuff goes on sale. It's coming up soon.
We would also remind you to rate and review us, please. We are newly available on Audible as of last month. We would love some 5-star ratings and reviews on Audible so that more people can find our podcast. So if you are so inclined and would like to take 10 minutes out of your day and rate a stellar rating and review for us, Audible would love to hear from you. Any other place where you can rate and review our podcast, we would love to hear from you there as well.
Thank you very much for all of those wonderful ratings and reviews. Kristen, you mentioned something about the fact that you wanted to return to something that we had done quite some time ago, which is a format called Ask Me Anything, which is really Ask Us Anything, because there's two of us. It's an interesting format, and so we put the question out to listeners, and we got some really outstanding response.
Yeah, we got a lot of great questions, probably enough that we're going to need to do two parts, but that's okay. Double episodes are just as good as single episodes. In fact, they're better because it's twice the fun. We are going to do what we normally do with listener questions, and I will acknowledge the person who sent us the question by name and thank everybody for having taken the time to send us those questions. And then Bill will answer and then I will answer, and we'll bounce off of each other as we go along, and we will do as many questions as we can until it's time to stop, and then we'll pick it up next time.
And as always, our answers are completely unrehearsed. Kristen Dilley, what do people want to know in an Ask Us Anything?
We'll go ahead and start with something I think that's fairly basic and a good jumping off point. This is from Les over at Colonial Parkway Murders. Thank you, Les. He said, I would like to hear more about Bill's transition from crime victim, family member to advocate, and how Kristen came to be involved as well.
That's a good question, actually. Most people that listen to the podcast know that my younger sister, Kathy Thomas, and her girlfriend, Rebecca Dowski, are the first two victims in the Colonial Parkway murders, and that stretches back 35 years. So I've been involved in the case for that long. In 2009, in the fall of 2009, I became aware, strictly by accident, the FBI had lost control of 78 highly graphic crime scene photos. And Fred Atwell, who comes up from time to time on the podcast, who's now late, as in he's no longer with us, disgraced former deputy sheriff in the Gloucester County, Virginia Sheriff's Department, had acted as a whistleblower, basically, had approached the media with a story that the FBI had lost control of these highly graphic crime scene photos from the four double homicides in the Colonial Parkway murders. I discovered this very much by accident a few weeks after stories had run in Virginia media, originally on WTKR, which Tidewater listeners will know as News Channel 3. A reporter named Mike Mather had broken the story. and featured Fred Atwell in two lengthy stories on the evening news of this leak of the photos. And Atwell was featured. I happened to discover this a few weeks after the story had run. I was living in Los Angeles at that time, so I wasn't seeing Virginia media. And just by happenstance, one evening after work, I was aware of the fact that the 23rd anniversary of Kathy and Becky's death was coming up. And so this would have been in late September 2009. On a whim after work, I Googled Colonial Parkway murders. And I don't know, something took me over and I, probably the stubborn Irishman in me, peered. And for some reason, I started reading every single story that appeared about the Colonial Parkway murders as they appeared in the Google search engine. And there were a lot of stories, some of which I'd seen, many of which I had not. And I just started reading them. And as I went through the stories, I stumbled upon something which was one of the WTKR stories with Mike and Fred Atwell. And they were talking about the crime scene photos. That led to me reaching out to other family members that very same evening. I reached out to Joyce Call, who's now Joyce Call Canada, her married name, and Chris Call. They were running a page, Whatever Happened to Richard Keith Call and Cassandra Haley on Facebook. And I sent them a Facebook message and introduced myself. And then that led to connecting with them almost immediately and then speaking to the two of them at some length over the weekend. And I had never spoken to any member of the Colonial Parkway murders families other than my own for, at that point, 23 years. So that's what led to me getting involved in the Colonial Parkway murders case. And here it is, what now, 12 and a half years later. And I've obviously become very involved in the case and had significant contact with all of the families in the Colonial Parkway murders. We've developed a very strong rapport and affinity for one another. We don't agree on everything, but we do agree that we're stronger together than we are apart. That's how I transitioned into becoming an advocate in the Colonial Parkway murders. That's the short version, I think.
Oh, that's good. And for me, I have always been aware of the Colonial Parkway murders because I am local. The story of the murders had, by the time I reached high school and driving age, taken on almost the tenor of an urban legend. We were always warned, don't drive on the parkway, don't go out at night, that sort of thing. So I was very aware of the Colonial Parkway murders. And it was a case that held a lot of fascination for me, not only because here it is, it's an actual local case. It's a place where I drive all the time. I was constantly on the parkway during the day because it was a place where I like to go to like chill and relax. But of course, I had also read Patricia Cornwell's All That Remains, which we covered here on the podcast. And so I was aware of the case both in real life and in fiction. How I got to be in contact with Bill and working more closely with the families is I made the decision after a lot of consideration of my own experience, knowing someone who was a murder victim. I decided that I wanted to try to write out everything that was going on with me when I tried to process my friends. And I decided that the best thing that I could do as a writer is try to come up with a concept for a book that explored the impact that murder has on the families of victims. To that point, no one else had done a book about that. I think there are actually very few books at this point that focus solely on victims' families. I think that's still something that the true crime space is working their way into. I wrote about my friend's case first. I wrote about her murder. When I reached a point where I had what I thought was a pretty good chapter on that and some good introductory information, I thought, what other cases can I write about? And the first thing that came to mind was, I wonder what happened to the Colonial Parkway murders families. And so I reached out to the Google machine and started Googling stories on the Colonial Parkway murders. The one thing that I noticed on almost every single story was comments of some variety from a guy who always signed his comments, Bill Thomas, brother of Kathy Thomas, Colonial Parkway murders. And I thought, okay, here's a guy I can get in touch with. I bet he'd be interested in telling me where the case is. And so I reached out to Bill, who vetted me quite strenuously first to make sure that I was not a kook or a murder junkie or anything like that, and asked what my interest was in the case. After I think we had an initial 2-hour conversation or something, yeah. And it was maybe like an hour into it when you were like, okay, now I'm willing to go on the record with you. We sat and talked, and I don't know, something just, I don't think it's ever occurred to me to ask Bill why you chose to trust me in the first place. You clearly did, because here we are.
As we talked about over the last couple of weeks on Mind Over Murder, I always try to check people out before I talk to them. I had done some research on you, and so I knew who you were. I also liked the idea of your book, and I still like the idea of the book.
I still do, too. It'll get written.
I hope you'll return to it, because it's a really cool idea, talking to the survivors of murder and how they have coped and adjusted, gone on with their lives. And I think it's a very cool idea. I thought so then, and I think so now. So I do hope you return to the idea of the book. And then just talking to you, your intelligence and your interest in the case shown through, and you'd clearly done your research and you were very smart, and I could sense your passion for what had happened to your friend, as well as murder victims generally, victims of violent crime. So it was a great conversation. And after a while, I thought, this woman's really got something going on here, and I wanted to help. As we've talked about before, when people cover the Colonial Parkway murders, one of my big things is, look, I want to help you because I want you to get the facts straight and help get the story out about these 8 young people. And so whether your angle is on my sister or one of the other victims or whatever your area of interest might be, we'd love for you to understand the perspective of the families who've been left behind and how we've transitioned. And at the same time, please get the facts straight, the dates and the times and the places and the suspects and what has happened so far with the case, because that's incredibly important, because we're still focused on the here and now, trying to move our cases forward. With that in mind, it's really helpful to talk to people. So it was a great conversation. I still remember it to this day.
It has been, I think, I'm not a big believer in the term fate or anything. It feels a little weird to say things like that, but I don't know. I feel like this partnership's destined to be. It's because there are so many other decisions that I could have made that would have led me to approaching any other subject matter for a book. But for some reason or another, wanting to talk about murder victims and their families and how they process and how they cope and how you move forward after the worst thing that can happen to a person has happened. Something about that just stuck with me. And then the first bit of research that I do, your name comes up. I don't know. It's like I said, I'm not a big believer in fate, but I feel like this was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe not this podcast at first.
And while we're on the subject, the idea of the podcast then, Mind Over Murder, comes about because I was doing a bunch of podcasts over the last X number of years, since podcasts had grown really popular and a lot of people covering true crime. As part of that effort to get the word out about the case. And I enjoyed talking to these people. They're like you. They're very smart, very interested in helping. And I had done college radio, spinning these things we called records way back in the day. And that's a long time ago now. But I really enjoyed college radio all those years ago, and had even thought about getting into broadcasting when I first graduated from undergrad at the University of Massachusetts. Didn't end up going down that road, but I always had great respect for broadcasters and good storytelling and that kind of stuff. As I did these podcasts and did these interviews, and then you'd listen back and I'd think, oh, that part was good. This part might need some adjustment. I could tell this story more concisely here or answer this question. But one of the things that came up was the podcasters, the hosts. And I, by that point, I'd probably done a dozen different podcasts over for a couple of years. They kept saying, you're really good at this, because I was like anything else. I try to focus on something and think about it and analyze it a little bit and then think, how could we be more effective? How could I do a better job in terms of my end of things? How can I be a better podcast guest? So the podcast hosts, after a while, kept saying, you should do your own podcast. You're really good at this. And then Kristen, and of course, we were working together already as advocates in the Colonial Parkway murders. You were listening to the podcast and you said, these are really good. And I told you the feedback, sometimes on the air, sometimes off, where people said, you really are good at this. You should do your own podcast. Yep. And I said to Kristen, the last thing the world needs is another white guy of a certain age, that would be me, pontificating about whatever, sports or politics or whatever you're into. I don't think that's what the world needs. I said to Kristen, I'll do a podcast if you'll do a podcast. And even though this wasn't something you necessarily aspired to, oh. I did give you the pitch, which was, it would be great to have two voices, not just one, to have a man and a woman.
Yep.
There's an age difference between us, if you can't figure out, Kristen is the young one. And you grew up in Virginia. I didn't grow up, although you went away for college and grad school and your part of your career for about a decade, if I have my math straight.
5 years, actually, only.
Okay. But you were gone for
a
while, but then returned to the Williamsburg area. So you had that experience, as you mentioned a moment ago, of growing up and then being aware of the Colonial Parkway murders.
Yes.
And I thought, I like that balance and that chemistry between the two of us.
Yes.
And I think that's worked out.
I think so, too. Our next question is from loyal listener Robert Gray, who always sends us like the best questions.
Thank you,
and
Robert.
I really like this a lot. So I figured that after talking about how we got our start in the true crime genre, I would go ahead and hit you with this question from Robert, Bill.
Okay.
Bill, had violent crime not impacted your life in the way it did, do you think you would have any interest in true crime as a media?
Boy, it's a real good question. And Kristen, as you said, Robert, who's become a friend and a supporter of the show and does always come up with good questions, that's a tough one. I do watch true crime and I do listen to true crime. We try not to listen to other podcasts if they're going to cover a case that we're covering. Just feeling we're going to imitate someone else's reporting or whatever, but I do try to listen. Consider myself a fan and a supporter of the true crime genre, and I like a good mystery. I like a good conspiracy theory, although most of them seem to have gone completely off the rails in the last few. I probably would not be as drawn to it if I didn't have the personal experience.
I can see that.
What about you?
For me, yes. Like I have always had an interest in true crime. And again, largely that is because I grew up hearing about the Colonial Parkway murders. So this very much informs that piece. I'm interested in crime because I am here and in the midst of it. I really like psychology and I really like the work that profilers do. I really like the work that smart forensics and investigative people do. I find it fascinating because I like knowing how the human mind works. And I also like knowing the ways that the human mind can go aberrant and weird and what happens when that happens. So I think that even if I was not in any way involved with the Colonial Parkway murders or the podcast or anything else, I would still 100% be a true crime fan. It's just something that I grew up with, from reading Patricia Cornwell way too early to reading John Douglas and Mark Oleshaker also way too early. Should not have been reading them at 14 or 15, but there it is. It is definitely something that it is so much a part of my make. I think I will always be a true crime fan. Yeah. There are times, though, when I can feel myself getting burned out on it. I don't know if you have that experience, too.
I do sometimes. I actually think between the two of us, you're a bigger true crime fan than I am. I often feel that you are able to squeeze in somehow more enjoyment, consumption, viewing, listening, whatever, of true crime than I am. And it's funny, we should tie those two things together, your last two comments. You also were touched by violent crime when your friend lost a loved one to a murder case.
Yes.
So you have that connection to this sort of dark kind of life experience.
Yeah. And that, and it's not something that we've really talked about on here before. Lynn's murder is not my story to tell necessarily. It's her daughter's story to tell. Mm-hmm. If she ever wanted to come on the podcast and talk about it, I would encourage her to do, but she doesn't want to share that. And that's understandable. I get it. And so I don't spend a lot of time talking about what happened to Lynn because I don't feel like Lynn's story is mine. But that said, it was a deeply upsetting experience to have happen, to get a phone call, as you well know. Are you sitting down?
Yeah. Isn't that awful?
And then to be told, yes. Yeah. I know are you sitting down is just, it is the most cliched and at the same time, the most awful thing that you can hear.
Yeah.
Because something horrible is going to come from it.
Yeah. What's coming next? You don't realize the magnitude of it necessarily.
Exactly. And so I still remember where I was when I got the phone call. Yeah. It's that kind of phone call that you can never look back from it.
Was it your friend Lynn calling to tell you the news?
No. So Lynn's daughter, Karen, was my best friend in high school.
It's backwards. It's Karen is your friend. Lynn is her late mother. Okay.
Yeah. And Karen actually, she didn't have a dinner to call. She couldn't. I got the phone call from my parents who had heard about it.
Oh,
and
I see.
They had learned about it. They also were friends with this and impacted my family. They had heard about this from a news story that had run on local news. Yeah. And it had run as a murder-suicide. They ran it with the very tawdry headline, Romance Turns Deadly. It's like, oh my God. Because that's not what it was and that's not what happened.
But all those
that's
news cliches about coverage of cases like these. You're listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors. We're back here at Mind Over Murder.
That phone call that you never think you're going to get. And then when it happens, is this real? Is this actually happening?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a very surreal experience and I wouldn't wish it on.
No. And it took my whole entire friend group by surprise too, because Lynn was the cool mom to our whole entire group of high school friends. We would go over to her place and she was very laid back and chill and make us virgin daiquiris in the blender. And she was cool mom.
Yeah.
And we loved her dearly. And to hear that she'd been shot to death, you can't process it.
And Karen was in your peer group of young people you went to school with.
She was my very best friend.
Understood.
She was my very best friend. So I was very close to her and very close to her mom. That was the sort of question after it happens, you wonder, how could I have been around this person, her murderer?
Yeah.
How could we have been around him and not known that this was going to happen?
Off the air.
Yeah.
Fairly recently, I would just caution, I don't think any of us can ever completely understand.
No, definitely
what's
not.
Going on in the mind of a murderer. And there's a darkness in all of us.
Yeah.
And here we are, we're dealing with what just seems like an epidemic of mass shootings across the country. Mm. People are obviously very troubled. You can't really know everything that's happening inside someone's mind and heart. I don't think you can put that on yourself, that you somehow should have seen something, a sign that Lynn's murderer was going to lash out in the way that he did. To put that weight on your shoulders and your young shoulders is not really fair to you even. You have find a way, if you can, to put that burden aside.
Yeah.
Here we are now. We're just coming back from CrimeCon a few weeks ago, and we've talked about this briefly on the podcast before, I think. Many of the people, not all, but many of the people in the true crime space have been touched by violent crime. So in answer to the question from Robert, I almost feel like advocacy chooses you more than you choose the advocacy.
I like that. I think there's a lot to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Robert. Excellent question.
Yeah.
Very thought-provoking.
And then on the heels of that one, this is also from Robert, and he says, outside of true crime podcasting, what other topics and issues do you both feel passionate about?
I'm very interested in so many other things. On the lighter side, I'm a big music person. I worked in the music business for many years. Movies, books and reading. I'm a tremendous news junkie. I'm very interested in politics. We actually, listeners may not agree with us, but we actually bend over backwards not to inject too much politics into our discussions here on Mind Over Murder. It's something that holds great interest for me personally. I'm very interested in travel and very frustrated still that we aren't able to travel as much as we were pre-COVID. I'm very interested in the environment. A lot of things really hold a tremendous amount of interest. We've got this old house that we're fixing up. So I'm very interested, as is my partner, Pamela, in home improvement, all that kind of stuff. We love watching all those shows about taking old houses and fixing them up. And we're doing exactly that. Kristen, you and Mark, your partner, have come and stayed with us here at the Maple House. I have a long list of other interests. It's usually just a struggle trying to find enough time to devote to all the things that I'm interested in. What about you?
Let's not forget your cars either. Your car guy.
I am a big car guy. And I'm also, I love bicycles. I like anything with wheels. I never got into motorcycles. I have some friends that are into motorcycles, but I love bicycles, and I especially love vintage cars, sports cars, that kind of thing. And as a matter of fact, I had the top down on the Miata today, running around taking care of some errands and having a blast on the back roads of Connecticut.
Nice. Nice. Yes, that lovely sporty little Miata of yours. Very cool. Again, because crime is not only just, it's currently my job, but also I was into crime fiction. We all know I'm a huge CSI devotee.
Right.
Criminal Minds. So other than the true crime aspect, I like crime fiction. That's always been an interest of mine. Well, I'm doing, I don't know, like my sixth or seventh total rewatch of CSI right at the moment. Yeah, I know, it's pretty bad. It's just something that I really enjoy, but I love reading, as anybody who has listened to our episodes of True Crime Bookshelf will understand.
Yeah, well, and not a surprise as someone who is a writer and teaches writing.
Wow. Right. And Bill, you've seen my bookshelves, exactly how much I have in terms of a collection.
Just added new books.
Yes. And I just keep adding. It's probably not the healthy elf.
There are much worse things you could be spending your money on than books. And you do read them all eventually.
Yes. Yes. So big reader. I love Pride and Prejudice. And so all Pride and Prejudice and Jane Austen continuations and variations. I love those.
Yeah. Pamela too. Yeah.
Because I work with teenagers, I've also developed a real interest in YA fiction. So I have a pretty large array of young adult fiction, and my students will suggest things to me. And if they suggest it, I'll read it. So I've actually got a pretty big collection of that as well. I love traveling, absolutely adore it. My current favorite travel fixation is Scotland. It's the best. It's amazing. And I still want to go back. I did one trip in 2016 with my best friend, Meg, and I really want to go back. Unfortunately, COVID has kept that from happening.
Yeah, it's still a damper on travel.
Very much. And then even though the running races thing is new for me, I've actually been a runner since I was 15 years old. I had to take time off for a while because of an ankle injury. But this sort of newfound zeal for one 5K a month for as long as I can possibly manage, that's a fairly recent development. But I do love running. And of course, I've got Ziggy Stardust, my beloved cat, who has plenty of time and attention.
Yeah, we're usually trying to strategize when we're recording Mind Over Murder as to whether Ziggy's going to be in the room or out of the room. He's never completely happy either in or out.
No, he is not happy at all. No matter, he wants the door open, not shut. So
he's a cat.
He's a cat. And really, writing is such a big part of my life. I feel like my personalized license plate actually says writer girl, if that tells you anything about how big a part writing is of my life. It is something that I have done ever since I was a very tiny child, and it continues. I try to do a little bit of writing every single day, poetry, short stories, screenplays. I have a couple of novels I'm working on, but none of them are ever, I think, going to see the light of day.
Speaking of travel and true crime
and
history, we're actually putting together a trip now. We've got the Savannah Crime Expo coming up September 10th in beautiful Savannah. So this combines, we'll be there with Mind Over Murder, and we'll be doing a panel, and we're working on that. But it occurred to me that there was a situation that combines several of our interests with Savannah, and we encourage people, if they're interested in coming, please come on down. It's a great one day, a smaller scale, perhaps a bit more manageable version of CrimeCon. Rachel Bell, who runs it, gets amazing guests, including a number of people that we really know pretty well and respect immensely. We can get into more about Savannah Crime Expo as the panels all come together, but it's a fantastic experience. And we had a great time last year, and we're heading back this year. Thinking while I was listening to you talk, Savannah Crime Expo, September 10th, actually combines a number of our interests.
Yes, it does.
Plus, you drag me around to all these really cool bookstores. And one of the things I laugh about is that whenever you and I go into a bookstore, which is obviously one of our favorite places, both of us, when we go to the true crime section, you're always saying, read that, want to get that, you should buy that, oh, you got to get this. It's just your enthusiasm for reading and writing just bubbles over.
I think that reading is one of the true joys in life. And I cringe and die a little bit inside every time one of my students is like, Miss Dillia, nobody reads anymore. Oh my God.
Yes, they do. That is just, that's such teenage angst.
It really is. But
nobody
it really,
reads anymore.
I have a rather large collection of YA and just regular general fiction that I keep in my classroom for my students, always in the hope that once they are done with an assignment, they will go back and pick up a book. Do you want to guess how often that actually happens?
Not as often as you would like.
Very rarely, if ever.
Oh, it's funny. One of the things I thought was pretty cool about young adult fiction, and it's really taken off in the last decade or so, is if that's what it takes to encourage young people to read more, I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
A million years ago, we got started with the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew mysteries. It just went on from there. When I was a kid, my big thing was I loved biographies. I wanted biographies. I wanted to understand who all these people were. Who was Benjamin Franklin?
Yeah.
Who was Anne Frank? Who were all these fascinating people that had influenced our lives far beyond the duration of their time on the planet, whether it was dozens of years in Frank's example or hundreds of years in the Ben Franklin example? I'm just mentioning two people that came to mind. There were so many people like that. I thought scientists, reading about inventors, how they came up with the things they developed, thought like Edison was just an absolutely fascinating guy.
Yes.
I think whatever it takes to pull in a young person in is a good thing. Young adult fiction, those are good stories that appeal to teenagers and preteens. And I'm hoping that your bookshelf will continue to at least draw kids in and have them check this stuff out, maybe grab a book and sit down in a quiet corner.
I have a couple. I even have a very comfy armchair that's in the corner of my room. It's in the back corner of the room. And I tell any kid, if you are done with your work and you want to sit back there with a book, you can. Generally, what happens though is kid will finish their work, grab a book, put the phone behind the book, and play on their phone. But hey, yeah, I try to make my classroom very comfortable and book friendly, but it's this time of the year when we are finishing up with school and I have to pack up all those books and bring them back home that I really regret having that many books in my classroom.
I'm glad you have them, Miss Dilly. So what's our next question?
Our next question is from Crystal, who asks, how do you choose your cases besides the obvious for the Colonial Parkway murders?
That's a tough one, I think. And I'd love to hear you weigh in as well. We'd like to do more. There's so many interesting things going on with the Colonial Parkway murders that we continue to come back to it in order to provide updates. We'd like to cover more cases. Mostly, it seems like a fairly organic process. In other words, something moves onto our radar. Do try very hard to not cover the cases that everyone else in the true crime space is covering. For example, we talked briefly about Gabby Petito when we put up articles about Gabby Petito, and no disrespect to the Petito family or anything like that. We just felt like that was a case that got a tremendous amount of publicity. And actually, that discussion that ensued about are we covering certain types of cases like Gabby's too much to the exclusion of others, we've been trying very hard to brainstorm with the two of us about what are some cases that have been covered lightly, if at all, and deserve more exposure. So I think it's more a matter of one of us will say to the other, have you read about this case? Or Kristen's very big on sending an article if she thinks something looks interesting.
For some of the cases that we started covering originally, like, for example, the Nicole Lovell case in Southwest Virginia, That was our third or fourth episode, I believe it was. That was just a case that I had heard about. I was horrified by it. And I felt like this isn't getting a lot of coverage. And I want to make sure that people do hear her story, because it did involve a girl who was so very young and who was being preyed upon through an internet app two college age students. And I thought that is so important to get that information out there. So sometimes it will be something that I have read about that I feel is important for us to cover. Sometimes it's a case that has its roots in a place where one or the other of us lived. We covered Grim Sleeper, for example, because it took place in Los Angeles and it's something that you were moderately familiar with. Mm-hmm. We covered the Canal Killer in Phoenix because I had lived there and I was familiar with it. But both of those stories were very interesting. Of course, with the Grim Sleeper case, there was the added bonus of, hey, here's a book, and Kristen read the book, and I bet if we cover the case, we can also get the author. And that does weigh into it, too, and actually, probably more than most people would think.
And so we're running our episodes on the Grim Sleeper case as bonus episodes right now. Actually, our episode with Christine Pelisek, the author, who was absolutely wonderful, is coming up. And like a lot of other interesting books in the true crime space, we like books that highlight some of the issues that we want to put forward. So, for example, familial DNA was used in that case. And there are a number of issues with a neglected community in South Central Los Angeles. Victims were African American, mostly women, sometimes involved in drugs and addictive behavior, and also in sex work. They were very badly served by the Los Angeles Police Department. And Christine Pelisek gets into those issues in the book. We also have an affinity for Virginia cases because, of course, Kristen lives in Virginia and the Colonial Parkway murders took place in Virginia. So we have a bit of a regional focus as well. It's not exclusive, but we have a tendency to pay attention to what happens in Virginia because of our connection to that part of the country.
Which actually feeds into the next question from Amber, who asks, will you be diving into any more local cases? And I do know Amber because she is the mother of a former student. So when she says local, she does mean here, local in this area. I know that one of the ones that you and I both would very much like to cover is the disappearance still of Cody Bigsby, 4-year-old Cody Bigsby, who has vanished seemingly without a trace and whose father is still being looked at as the only suspect in his murder. I really want to cover that. And in fact, I think if we could get our friend and Kristen's perpetual true crime crush, Jim Clemente, and on this to talk about child abduction and the issues that come up around that, I would love to have Jim come on to talk a little bit about the Cody Bigsby case. Any other, I know that local for me is different than local for you, Bill, but are there any other cases recently that have come on your radar that you'd be interested in covering that are like Virginia cases?
We've both had a great deal of interest in Deshaud Sage Smith disappearance in Charlottesville and some of the issues that are put forth there. We will try to move forward with our coverage. We were trying to bring something fresh and new to the discussion rather than just other things that have been discussed. We think that Sage, as a trans woman and an African American woman, deserve significantly more coverage than she's received. We also both think that's a solvable case. There's a leading suspect, and we actually think that he is probably responsible for her murder. What we're looking at is trying to come up with a fresh approach and a way that we feel like we can bring some energy and enthusiasm and perhaps some resources to that case. We don't want to just regurgitate coverage that happened a few years ago when Sage went missing. So that's what we're working on. And if we feel like we come up with that approach, then we'll probably put the case forward. So I think the answer is yes, we will cover more cases in Virginia. There are two right there that we've just mentioned that are of interest to us, and there are others. Our focus here at Mind Over Murder is not exclusively on Virginia cases, far from it, but we do definitely have an affinity for cases from that area.
That's going to do it for part one of Ask Us Anything here at Mind Over Murder, but we are going to continue this into a second episode. Until then, thank you so much for listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll see you next time.
Mind Over Murder is a production of Absolute Zero and Another Dog Productions.
Our executive producers are Bill Thomas and Kristen Dilly.
Our logo art is by Pamela Arnois.
Our theme music is by Kevin MacLeod.
Mind Over Murder is distributed in partnership with Crawl Space Media.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
You can also follow our page on the Colonial Parkway Murders on Facebook.
And finally, you can follow Bill Thomas on Twitter at BillThomas56.
Thank you for listening to Mind Over Murder. Thank you.